Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We're doing a Sunday strategy session, special Sunday strategy session here. We have subscriber Dan with us. And Dan today, I'm super fascinated by this. And this is why he's coming on to talk about this this draft. I don't think a ton of Dynasty drafts are done live. I haven't heard of many auctions done live. So this is really interesting to me. When I heard it was going on, I was like, I got to hear this story. So Dan, thanks for coming on with us and talking about what I think is a pretty unique and very interesting league profile. How did you find the league?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This will be really fun to talk through this very wild experience, but super fun too. I found the league, and this is something I'd probably recommend if anyone wants to get a format like this, through like a league mate who I really liked through like just kind of random, you know, trade talk banter and other stuff on league chat. He's like, hey, I've been having this idea for a while. I've really wanted to try the new auction feature on Sleeper, and they're releasing Best Ball too. So that's another facet of this league, which was another sort of strategy factor to consider, was real live auction plus best ball for Dynasty. And so he threw that out there like months ago. He's like, I want to kind of take some time, find the right folks. I ended up recruiting a couple friends in real life that play Dynasty, another league mate I really like. So it was a really cool group, I guess, pulled together, and it took some time. The commissioner took like 4 months to get together to find the right date. So it was not a like random, not well thought through league setup. It was pretty well put together, which I think is important for the type of setup.
Yeah. And this, the live aspect of this, you used the word wild, which I think is, that's what my expectation would be. How did you, talk a little bit about the format in terms of, you said it's best ball. I think it's super flex as well.
Yep. Yeah. So, Superflex, best ball, start 11. So 3 wide receiver, 3 flex, tight end premium, 1.75 points per reception. So a few different things to weigh in there strategically, which I also liked about the league. There's a lot of different nuances to kind of think about when you're kind of considering roster construction, how you want to go about it.
Yeah, let's start with that. What was your construction strategy? Sort of what was your aim to accomplish at the start?
I wanted to, probably the biggest thing I was trying to figure out in prep was I was so used to startup rounds as evaluation, mm-hmm. and sort of having 8 hours or 4 hours at a time to hop onto the GroupMe chat or just sort of ponder like, what should I do here as far as like moving up, moving back? There's obviously no trading. One other interesting aspect of this draft that came up, I should have brought this up in the setup. There was trading before the draft. So everyone had a $300 auction budget. And one of the league mates that I invited who runs a few leagues, he's awesome. He's like, you know what we should do is we should offer up future draft picks for auction startup dollars. So there was actually a flurry of activity in the days leading up to the draft. I participated in it as well, where people were trading like future rookie picks for auction dollars. So the starting point was like $300, but there were guys that went into the auction with like $185 and they accrued a bunch of future rookie picks. AOD listener, not surprisingly, like I shipped out a bunch of seconds, thirds and fourths, and I started with like, I want to say $340 or $350. So I was like, I'm kind of going to try to win now. That's the best sort of from the books, the best way I thought to set it up. And so I didn't sell any future first, but I sold some seconds, thirds and fourths for what I thought were really good value, especially when it came down to the auction. So that was another part of the strategy, was you could start with more auction dollars to set up. So anyways, that was one other facet to it. And so when I thought about roster construction, I was like, all right, I'm starting with more vets than rookies. And so I was kind of looking at just doing some research on translating player values into auction dollars as sort of a percentage of $300 budget, and sort of put together the same kind of target list that I normally would for a slow draft, but instead of rounds targets, it was dollar targets.
Got it. What did you do a budgetary allocation towards positions? Did you say like, hey, you know, I'm going to do this percentage for quarterback, this percentage for running back, wide receiver, tight end, or how did you sort of deal with that in the planning stage?
Nope. And that's one of my biggest recommendations. One of the biggest misses I did was I wasn't thoughtful enough about how to do exactly what you described, but also taking into account the best ball factor, how to think about how much to set aside. Depth does matter more in best ball. And so I wish I'd have done that. That's the right way to do it, is you have your player values. And then I think to say, you know, roughly, this is what I want to spend per position, but not only per position, but per position and starters. And then this is how much I want to spend per position on my bench would be the way I would do it. I did not do that. And it showed up in my results, which I would say were not bad, but not great. I would love to. I want to do another one again based on having actually gone through it once.
Yeah. I'd imagine. What was the depth of the league in terms of total players you could roster?
So this is another thing like that's, I think, really important about the auction. There was a slight change towards the end that also messed with my budget. It was basically if we voted on 20, so 11 starters, 13 bench. So I think it was 24 man roster. And then kind of last minute, I was like, hey, we're just going to add in 4 more roster spots for rookie. So it's actually going to be, I think it's 28 rounds. It's 20 or 29. Either way, that was important because the amount of dollars you have left over relative to the amount of spots you have really matters towards the middle and end of the draft. And that was something I also missed on, was I spent a bit much early and thought I had plenty to spend later, but you kind of can't max bid beyond like a dollar once you get to a certain amount of roster spots filled.
Yeah. I'm interested sort of what your plan was in terms of going into it. Did you plan on doing, stars and scrubs? Did you want to go balanced? You know, what percentage of your roster did you anticipate going with like a dollar?
Yeah, I was thinking I wanted to go balanced. And I thought, okay, I'll just look for value on a player-by-player basis, but I'll go balance. I'll sort of have maybe $5 to $10 players and a good amount of $2 to $5 players. And then we'll see kind of where the rest, you know, starters would be. Just, you know, the majority of the budget. But it ended up going stars and scrubs because I just got so into the value. Like, on the flip side, like, I don't think I did badly in the draft. Mm-hmm. Because I'm getting a lot of trade interest and I've already been able to develop some depth through who I have on top end starters. But so that's a good thing. So I felt like I got really good value in the starters that I selected. And then kind of ran out of cash early. It was like, okay, so who are the best dollar players I could get? But I went into it thinking more balanced than stars and scrub, but I executed stars and scrubs for sure.
Got it. Did the, just as you mentioned building some depth out, does the value that you pay for a player in the actual auction, does that go towards the salary cap in season, or once you pay for the player, like the cost of what you paid doesn't matter?
Yeah, it's the latter. So exactly for this league setup, it was really just for the auction for the startup. And now it's sort of operating as a typical league with rookie picks and trades and all that stuff, but there's no more auction dollars for left to consider.
Okay.
I have heard of formats like there's a friend of mine who runs another league. I haven't done a league with him, but he sets up rookies. All future rookie drafts are based on auction dollars, and sort of you're sort of allocating auction dollars throughout the offseason to go buy Trevor Lawrence or whoever. So that's kind of another interesting setup, but that's not how it worked in this league.
Got it. Yeah. No, that'd be interesting. Sort of, I play in I think one salary cap league, and it's the rookie slots have a certain salary. It's like the NFL, the way the salary cap's done. So it'd be interesting to do it as like an all encompassing auction, but that's a story. It's probably a story for a different day. So
yeah, for sure.
I think it's interesting sort of what you said about the stars and scrubs. I would lean, I haven't done these auctions. I did a ton of baseball ones. And the more I play Dynasty, like I think I'd probably be interested in doing some Dynasty auctions, maybe one later this summer, something like that. I get the feeling that the optimal roster build is stars and scrubs. Because, and especially if you're doing like an AOD build, And I'd be interested. There's some people that are analytics at Dynasty subscribers, and I'm interested in the psychology of the auction build. But I get the impression with, like, if you just think about the best player in the trade premium that you have in a standard, in your standard league, that absolutely exists. So would you rather take, you know, the, I don't know, $50 that you're going to spend towards, you know, Saquon Barkley, for example, and spend it on, you know, and split it between, I don't know, David Montgomery and Josh Jacobs? Like, that's not going to get you Saquon Barkley, right? So totally. There's definitely, I think, and as you sort of do this and sort of build out your teams, I do think that there is a, that there's a value beyond just what you would say in terms of, like, okay, if you were to sort of warp, if you were to warp this, right, to use the warp concept and say, all right, like, this is the precise, like, this player is worth $49.03 or whatever, like, in terms of warp projection, right? That's what the ADP would say.
Yep.
It's, they're worth more than that, right? Because they have, they just are. So it's an interesting, like, I don't think if you're going to err on the side of paying up early, I don't think you're erring, to be honest with you. Like, I would be aggressive.
I think that's right. I think the only twist is best ball. I haven't played a lot of best ball. And I do think that sort of, like, you talked about it. I mean, I listened to your pod the night before as one of my final prep things on best ball strategy. And I do think that wide receiver depth is something I wish I had just planned for a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Because if you get the right set of, like, Curtis Samuel, kind of Corey Davis types, and you get four of those guys at $2 or $3, you've got yourself a wide receiver one or two every week, pretty much. And I think I missed on that because I was more like Darius Slayton, Tyrell Williams at $1. And that's, like, I mean, also, it's not terrible. And part of me is, like, really curious to see how it plays out, because I have enough, like, between KJ Hamler, Lynn Bowden, and Darius Slayton, and Tyrell Williams, you can see I'm a degenerate because I remember all this stuff is burned into my brain. Like, I don't know. Is that so much different? Like, are they, is that going to produce a flex, a high flex maybe? You know, is that the difference between having Barkley versus some depth? And then I'm really curious to see how that plays out. So maybe I would, my gut says, the one thing I know not to do is what one of the league mates just shipped a bunch of auction dollars in the startup for future rookie picks and started with like a $180 budget instead of a $300 budget. So one thing I did right before the draft was I traded my 2022 first for his 2023 first in anticipation of him having a really poor roster construction. And after the auction, that's kind of exactly how it played out. So I wouldn't do that. I think really going all in on rookie picks, just skipping the startup auction for the most part, which is what he did, is a really, really rough way to start off your team.
Yeah. And if you're down, just by way of reference, I think it's important, like, your top two guys, Russell Wilson, Saquon Barkley, that's Russell Wilson's $54, Saquon Barkley's $61. And so if you sort of just do the math on that, that is essentially him forfeiting that.
Yep.
Right. And so, and there's, you know, there's some more, you know, depending on exactly how much he forfeited or whatever, like, you know, would you take, it's basically two first round startup picks or two, you know, I don't know, top 14 startup picks, I guess. That's for future picks. That's a lot, right? Like, that's got to be like that. And again, that can take a long time to recover from. That could be a 4-win difference, right, in terms of what you're going for. So I do think that's an interesting, and I think it's a savvy thing. And you need the, you know, you need some trucks to, you know, you need some horses to really get you a late pick. And his is in a situation where, you know, come 2023, like, even if he's like a fringe playoff team, like, he's probably not going to get a bye just because he doesn't have the horsepower to get there. Right. Like, you just, almost no matter what happens, he's going to have a really hard time reaching that. It's a pretty rare outcome. So I think it's that's an interesting, it's definitely an interesting sort of bet on getting his future pick there. So for sure.
The other thing I did that he did just to close the gap on this guy, I don't want to pile on too much, but he accidentally bought Jonathan Taylor for $75. And then sort of middle of the live auction, he's like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. And I'm like, oh gosh, well, you really don't have any money left. And then he traded him for two firsts, like right after the auction was over. So he got Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Scrubs. So
What's the, I mean, again, yeah, we don't want to pick on him, but what's the purpose of doing that? Right. Like, why go Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and then go scrubs? Right. Isn't that sort of, it's a, like, if you're going to punt, like punt, you know, like not, and I'm not saying start, you know, I'm not saying start Deshaun Kizer, right? Like start, you know, like play, but don't roster old quarterbacks, right? What's the odds that his contending team's going to be, you know what I mean?
Like, I don't know. Yeah. I was very close to trading Russ Rodgers and his 2022 first. Mm-hmm. But he wouldn't give on that. He wanted to give me one of his other 2022 first. And I know we've talked about this. Don't try to predict the future. But I was like, nah, yeah. I want yours. Yeah. So I'll just hang on to Russ.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got, just by way of reference, he's got Gerald Dokes, who's just top running back. Terrace Marshall, Jalen Waddle, Denzel Mims, Christian Kirk. Like, it's kind of a struggle past the quarterback phase of it. So, you know, I think you're pretty wise to sort of target that. Like, even if Rodgers and Brady finish 1-2, like, he's going to have a hard time being not a top couple pick. So you mentioned this earlier, which is the nominating process. And I'm really interested to see, you know, this, so this is going by quick, right? This isn't a, hey, you got 4 hours to spend. Like, how long is the bidding process going on?
Oh, so the most fascinating thing about the auction, setting aside best ball and some of the nuances there, is you're basically setting your dynasty roster, and the market is setting and resetting itself in 30-second increments, which is the part that's wild. It's just like a really wild 4 hours of your dynasty life, and really fun too. And so the part of that strategy is you have 30 seconds to nominate and then 30 seconds to bid. And so just kind of go over the structure of the auction. The nomination, that's hard and fast. If you kind of forget to press your, you know, pick a player during the nomination, I think it'll just take someone, whoever the highest ADP is, and just put them out there. Mm-hmm. So it's not a huge, hugely important thing, but I found it pretty important, as I learned, to nominate, like let's take a good player who I didn't want, like Justin Herbert. So I nominate guys like him all throughout the draft, whoever was sort of in the target range. And I was like, okay, I want other people to spend money on this. And so I'd put out the dollar bid, and then I would just sort of chill and watch other mm-hmm. people spend their money on players they didn't want. So it's kind of counterintuitive when I first went to it. I was like, oh, you nominate the guy you want. Actually, you nominate the guys you don't want, mm-hmm. because then you get everyone to spend money on the players you're not targeting to give you a little bit of an edge on the budget you have left over for the guys that you do want.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting, and I think that's right. Like, I always, my advice to people is, again, I don't do a lot of this, but I know from sort of watching them and from playing it in other sports, I always picked, right? I think it's the nominating process is just information, right? It's like a trade negotiation. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it has always been like, let me, you know, I sort of generally know what the market is going to do in terms of, you know, like Herbert and Burrow should be close, right? Like relatively close in terms of cost, because they're going relatively close in terms of startup drafts. Or, you know, Russell Wilson should be sort of in there too. And then there's probably a gap between them and like a guy like Dak Prescott. So you sort of want to nominate someone in that range, because then you can sort of say, hey, like, all right, now I sort of know when my guy comes up, I sort of know relative to the rest of the position, like, this is kind of how I want to play it. So,
yeah, that's true too. You get a bunch of, you're giving yourself market value information that is at a premium when you're trying to think on your feet like that. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing to say is one thing I probably missed on at least once or twice is sort of like, okay, I'm nominating this guy. This isn't a target list. I'm sort of, it is hard to stay super engaged on an auction for 4.5 hours. I mean, right. You just get kind of tired.
Right.
And there were moments even early on where I was like, oh crap. Like, I think Trevor Lawrence, I remember I was like, I should have bid on him. He wasn't one of my target players, but I think he went for a really good cost. And so you kind of got to stay on your toes with non-target players and just kind of watching that and be like, all right, well, I'll buy him for that, because you can always flip him for something you want later.
Yeah, he goes for 57 relative to, and you got Russell Wilson for 54. So that's about right. Like, by way of reference, Lamar Jackson 70, Rodgers is actually 30, it looks like 39. Mahomes was 89. So that's a pretty penny there. What's interesting when you sort of look at the Mahomes angle, and I don't know, I'd be interested. I my guess is that this person sold off some money, right? So sold off some startup money.
Yeah.
But when you look, that's a extremely star and a lot of scrubs. Like there's Michael Thomas, there's some other guys in there, but it is a very different roster construction, you know. And then when you sort of look at some of the other ones, like, you know, Dak Prescott's up there as well. He's at 81. So I do think, you know, relative to the position, like you got a pretty good discount on Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I think I was happy with Russ. Going back to, like, I thought Mahomes is a decent price, because if you look at like Kyler went, again, I have this stuff burned in my memory, I think 85 bucks.
Yep.
I thought Mahomes is actually a pretty decent deal. The guy who picked him is my friend in real life. He had a bit of a rough go the rest of the auction. I think he was drinking, which is understandable. It's a fun thing too. But like Dak was, I have a good amount of shares of Dak, and I was like, I'm going to go get him. But I did cap it at $75. I was like, after the market got set for Mahomes, I was like, I'm not going to pay. And he went, so I dropped it. I was all the way on Dak up until 75, 76 bucks. And I was like, all right, moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a, and you just notice like the difference between like those high end quarterbacks versus guys like Derek Carr going for 7 and, you know, Goff going for 9, it looks like. And then, you know, so you do see how it sort of orders, but that's a massive difference. You know what I mean? A huge, huge, huge difference, which is pretty interesting. So tell me about how it starts off in terms of, you know, it's got to be chaotic at first. It's a 30 second, just so I have this clear, it's a total 30 seconds of bids. Is that right?
So like, 30 seconds to nominate, and then you kind of go in the order in which you nominate is sort of inconsequential. But then once the player's nominated, there's 30 seconds for everyone to bid. But the other interesting thing though is if you bid in the last 10 seconds, the clock goes back up to 10 seconds.
Okay.
Getting in a bidding war, it can kind of drag it out, and some people get, I don't know if I was being annoying or what, but my strategy was sometimes to run it down to 2 seconds and bid again, which would prolong it, and that frustrated some league mates. Like, why do you keep doing that? It's like, I don't know, I just wanted to see if you get too excited and maybe keep bidding it up. So
And plus it gives you the ability to process sort of what you want to do, right? I mean, it's like,
yeah, and give me another second to sort of think like, okay, how far do I want to go? I'm going to give myself a bit more time and try to do it like $1-$2 increments at a time.
Right. How early did you get, you know, what's the initial types of players being thrown out?
A lot of quarterbacks. I feel like, I wish there was a nomination order list. I can't remember that, but I do feel like quarterback was super common. The player order, the nomination order, kind of roughly followed what a typical slow draft order would go like for the most part, particularly for Superflex. There was a lot of quarterbacks early. Every once in a while, you'd sort of, which actually hurt my buddy in the end. Like somebody threw out Michael Gallup kind of in the 6th roundish range, and he ended up spending $7 on him. And at the time, I was like, oh man, that you're gonna be bummed about that. Sure enough, Gallup would have been a $2 player, you know.
Right.
So it's people did that a couple times. So it's like, this is kind of curveball got thrown out there. But for the most part, it kind of followed your typical slow draft order of in terms of nominations as far as, you know, player value.
Yeah. So you go, to hit on your stars and scrubs point, you basically spend money on essentially, I think it's maybe 9, 10 guys. So you end up with Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, and Matthew Stafford as your quarterbacks, Barkley, Eckler, Montgomery as your anyone above a dollar running backs, Brandon Ayuk, Mike Evans, Robert Woods, are your only above dollar wide receivers. And then you've got Kittle and Austin Hooper and Zach Ertz as your tight end. Ertz goes for the minimum, which is interesting. So it's basically like eight to 10 guys there that go for anything more than a dollar, which in a 25 man roster, like that might be a slight bit aggressive, but I actually don't think it's That's not bad, right? I mean, you can, and you got some deals on guys in here in terms of, you know, like Ertz, for example, like going for a dollar, like he's probably worth a little bit more than that. You know, Hooper is going for two, like he's probably worth a little bit more than that. So it does seem like you got some deals in there. Talk to me about the decision to draft Deshaun Watson.
I just drafted him in a regular slow draft in at 5'11". Mm-hmm. And I feel like, I mean, he's just so cheap. You just right. kind of think about him being a franchise quarterback in 2022 and beyond. He's probably worth, you know, $50. I don't know if he's mm-hmm. is he worth that much less than Trevor Lawrence in the long run. Definitely not in 2021. But I already had Russ and Stafford, mm-hmm. I think. So I think I bid on him after I had those two guys. And so I was like, yeah, I'll take Deshaun. That's a yeah. great QB3.
Right. And just, I mean, you're looking at a player that's going literally for half of what he went for, exactly half of what Lamar Jackson went for. Right. Yeah. Like he goes for basically exactly what Justin Fields goes for. Trevor Lawrence goes for 57. So $22 more than Deshaun Watson. You know, when you just think of that, like that's pretty wild in terms of the difference. I mean, Kyler Murray went for 85 and that's exactly. $50 more. And you just think like, I don't know, the way I think you're right in terms of looking at it, like if in 2022, right, he's back and it's week one and he's starting wherever he's starting, you basically had, I don't know, but $380 in your startup draft, right? Isn't that essentially what you'll sort of look back on that and be like, wow, there's $50 of equity there, right? In terms of him
yeah.
performing as a high end quarterback one. Like that's just it's just a really big time bet. And then, you know, if you miss, right? I mean, it's in the range of like Mike Evans. That's kind of who you're missing on, but at that value of money, right? That's
yeah.
Evans went for, I think, 30. You know, Ridley goes for 42, for example. Like that's kind of the range of the position you're missing on. Like, I don't know, to me, that's big time in the favor of Watson.
That's what, and I just did this in a slow draft. I think Watson as a QB3 is just such a sweet play right now, because I just drafted Mahomes, Russ, and then Watson as my QB3 in another league. And I'm missing on RB1 and wide receiver one. I also traded for some rookie picks and that hurts a bit, but I feel like I can figure that out later. And if you got those, like if Watson's your third best quarterback as far as value, I think it's a good way to set up your team, and you can sort it out later. If he goes to jail, I'm in trouble. I've got some work to do, but you know, these are all micro bets you gotta assess.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not gonna bankrupt you either. Right. I mean, that's the beauty of sort of knowing the hit rate in that range is you basically have, you know, you're kind of looking at 50-50 bets anyways. So we don't have a question of if true. Deshaun Watson can play. We just have a question of if Deshaun Watson will play. Right? Right, that's a very different, it's like the Rodgers thing right now. They're basically, you know, and for different reasons, but it's that they're kind of similar in that way. So what would you give in terms of, not necessarily this auction in terms of the speed, we'll get to that in a second, but in terms of the auction process in general, from someone going to, from a draft to trying an auction for the first time, what advice would you give them?
The first thing you mentioned, so I think like I started off, okay, I mean, set up your target, your players, and come up with a target dollar spend that you want to have per player. I think that was what I did that and I would recommend that again. But the part I didn't do, which you mentioned, was also determine kind of what you want your positional budget for both starters and bench. Like maybe overall starters, overall bench, and then positional starters, positional bench would be another good thing to do. And kind of just track that as you go along. I didn't do that. I wish I would have done that a little bit more to help on depth a bit. I think that would be a really good starting point. And then I would run, there's some, this was run on Sleeper. You can do a bunch of mocks on there. Do a couple of those. I could tell a couple of people like they never did that. That's a tough way to go into it. I've had a couple of misses, but I sort of was very familiar with the mechanics of how it was going to work. Just having, you know, those mocks go pretty fast, faster than the real auction, because you're just going against computers usually. So do that so you can kind of get used to the mechanics of it. And then the other thing that I did not do, which was kind of like what I sort of incidentally went too scrubby on the Stars and Scrubs, was I bought Robert Woods as my last purchase at $9. I'm so stoked. He's my wide receiver 3. I still got $19 to spend. I'm going to spend $2-3 and a few players. And I had too many roster spots when you include the taxis, which is where I got tripped up. Mm-hmm. Spend more than a dollar the rest of the draft. And so if you think of it in terms of regular slow draft, basically by round 10 or 11, I just sat there until round 16.
Right.
And I was
right.
All these, and I was like, oh, I had money to spend on these guys, but other people knew how to play that. And they were just picking off, you know, again, Curtis Samuel, what, $3, $4, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of guys, a bunch of receivers specifically. I wanted more receiver depth. And I missed on sort of that round 9 to 13 receivers, which I think are really good in best ball in particular. Right. But I feel okay about the scrub receivers I got. And there's ways to trade into depth if you want to. But I think that's it was really smart to see guys just kind of have a few more dollars than available roster spots to keep bidding at like $2, $3 and kind of keep them right just above water. I like the way they constructed their rosters that way.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think if you could redo it, you'd probably say, yeah, maybe a little bit more high-end wide receiver depth. But yep. I don't necessarily know where you stripped that from. Is it, you know, when you sort of look at it, like what would you, you know, what player would you take out to do that for? And like, I don't know, I like the build, right? So, I mean, maybe it's you don't take, you know, maybe it's you don't take Stafford and Watson, right? Maybe you have to sacrifice between one of them. And that's ultimately probably what it was, right? I mean, if you sort of look at this, like that's kind of where the build is, right? If you sort of were to just go by rounds, like that's kind of where the difference is. And you have just that other guy that's, again, it's pretty valuable, but hey, listen, if like Deshaun Watson comes back week one and is good, like that you can get a haul for either him or Stafford or Wilson and be fine. Right. And
yeah,
you're playing the long game there. And I do think like the long game is more important than probably like your wide receiver 6 being a $2 guy versus a $1 guy. Like what's really the difference?
I think that's right. And so far I've seen it in the post draft activity. So I think the worst type of build is what happened with the one guy again, not to pile on. Just don't mortgage startup dollars for future rookie picks. That's rough. And then I think pure depth is probably really good for next year. But one thing I've noticed is I'm getting a decent amount of inbound trade offers. They're not very good ones. Like yesterday, somebody asked for Barkley. And basically they're going to give me 2 firsts and Cohen for Barkley. Mm-hmm. And I was like, nah, I'm good. No thanks. But that's not a bad offer. And I think it shows I've been getting a decent amount of inbound by having the Stars and Scrubs. So I think it's good. It's just good to have those top end players. And I will say one trade I've already done to kind of the flexibility you can get by having good players is it hurt because I like Eckler, but I traded Eckler and Benny Snell for Josh Jacobs and Daryl Henderson. And sort of the bet there was like, I just wanted a better RB4 than what I had before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I don't know. Eckler to Jacobs felt I like Eckler a little more, but I don't think it felt worth it to me. And then Benny Snell's already like, he might get cut. So whatever. Like I built a little depth there. I didn't have to do too much to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I released a podcast as we're recording this. We're recording this Friday afternoon. Friday afternoon, my time, Friday morning, still your time. I think it was released today. It's either released today or tomorrow. I did a podcast on basically the competitions and I actually included the Rams one in there. And it was like when you grade out Daryl Henderson versus Cam Akers, like the chosen king of Cam Akers, like it doesn't grade out that much better than Daryl Henderson. And actually I don't think he grades out better than Daryl Henderson. Like I'm being generous by Cam saying Akers.
He went 201 in a rookie draft that startup. I'm like, man, I understand anointing JT, but talent right. is confusing to me because right. he just Daryl Henderson's pretty good, and I don't know if there's much evidence that shows that that's a real that there's a workhorse role, and he's getting valued and drafted like that. Yeah, I like Henderson. I have a ton of Henderson.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's probably he might be my favorite backup running back to own right now, which is hilarious. He's gonna go on my wall of guys that I thought people were crazy for drafting, or they drafted him in rookie drafts, but then like they become my guys. Like I got to come up with like mm-hmm. the name for that. But you know, we got human hand grenades. It's not really that. It's more of like, I don't know. It's post type sleepers probably isn't the right, you know, isn't the right phrasing for it. We got to come up with a term for it, but he's definitely one of those guys for me. It's just a market, you know, he's a flippity flop player, I guess. So you gave us sort of the auction overview, which I think is right in terms of how you sort of look at, you know, the auction process generally. What would you say specifically for this fast clock situation?
I don't know, stay caffeinated and stay.
don't there, drink.
Actually, yeah, I mean, there's little things like that. Like I sound silly, it's because it's a game and my wife was really annoyed by the end of it, but I was really happy to be like in my basement with no children around for a couple hours right. at the beginning of it, because it kind of is really different than that slow draft. And you're like, oh, I'll figure this out in the next 30 minutes or an hour or whatever. You just like constantly kind of watching. And I think the biggest thing is it's just trying to understand what other teams are doing mm-hmm. and what their budgets are and what the market is. Like Derek Carr went for, I think, $7. And I remember kind of like, again, I still feel good about the bill, but Stafford for $25 or Derek Carr for $7. I was like,
yeah,
I'd have maybe just done that differently and waited and gotten Carr for $7 instead of Stafford for $25. Then I've got my wide receiver problem would have been solved. So right. stuff like that, I think, is just you kind of got to really be on your toes to watch, just kind of keep processing market value, your own budget, your opponent's budgets in real time as it's getting set and reset constantly, and then keeping your budget above your available roster spots. And that's just kind of like, yeah, don't drink. don't, you know, like, really, that didn't help. A couple guys like, I'm feeling pretty faded. And like, there was also a surge of energy the first hour. I remember there was, this is so awesome. And then by hour three, a bunch of people were like, oh my gosh, I'm kind of losing some energy. And I was like, okay, good. I'm going to focus more. I think this is winning time.
Right.
And that's where I was also frustrated, because I was staying engaged and I was kind of starting, after I bought Robert Woods for $9, I was like, uh-oh, I can't bid more than a dollar now. I didn't realize that was going to happen. And that was, I could see that there was three or four people that were just executing that strategy, and they just owned that middle round. There's a few of us just waiting until everybody else ran out of money. And they were just kind of like three guys were kind of figuring out who they wanted for $2, $3, or $4 for a while. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of that fast style, is just keep being on your toes about what's happening with all those dimensions for a few hours.
Yeah.
So I think the whole thing took about 4.5 hours.
Nice. Nice. I think you're right there too, with the, you can get really punch drunk early on by everyone just bidding and bidding and bidding and bidding. Whereas if you just sort of sit back, and it's like a poker tournament, you know, they've got the, is it Phil Hellmuth? I think he used to come in, mm-hmm. you know, like 4 hours after it started, just so that way he didn't sort of get involved in that nonsense, you know, just give away his big blinds basically. And it's an interesting way to sort of think about an auction draft as well. Let me ask you a question here. Just a couple specific ones. Derek Carr and DJ Moore or Matthew Stafford?
I probably do. Well, I'm thinking best ball as well. So mm-hmm. that's part of the format. So just through the lens of this particular draft, maybe a little bit on DJ Moore and Carr.
Yeah.
That's close.
I mean, that's what it ended up. That's what the difference ended up being, right? Basically he got DJ Moore for 16. Yeah. So that's 23 total between them. Stafford went for 25. Judy, he got for 13. That's kind of the range of the position you're looking at. Again, I don't think it's not damning, right? It's not going to, I don't think, inflict like mortal damage on you, but that's kind of level of the position that you're missing. And I think you kind of know that. That's interesting. But then you could sort of go a different route, and you could have went Terrence Marshall for 11, Waddle for 11. And then all of a sudden you're looking at that and you're like, no, I'd rather have Stafford. So it's really how you spend the money. And No, it's tough. I don't know. I think you could probably do that deal if you wanted to. Like, I would, you know, I probably wouldn't rush to do it right now, but I think you could probably do something like that that looked like that. You know, Keenan Allen, for example, is interesting. Like, what's it's so different because you sort of look at some of the guys and then the, you know, if you had Carr and Keenan Allen, like, I think you'd be thinking significantly different. That's the same price that Stafford went for. Again, you don't know that it's going on, but it's interesting.
Exactly. I think that's where that budget management comes in. And I was pretty, you know, physically and mentally sober during the first hour or so. Mm-hmm. I was pretty methodical about what I wanted to pay and looking at player level, not budget. And still kind of got caught up in just, oh, this is a good value. Like, I feel like every one of the 10 or 11 top guys I got were good value relative to the what I'd sort of charted out beforehand. Mm-hmm. It's just that there's that extra sense of like the real-time market value shifts and your own budget that is hard. It's hard to kind of manage in real time. The other thing I will say is, like, from a trading perspective, we'll see how this works out, but I think that it's good to not trade too close to the auction because people still have how much they paid in auction dollars sort of fresh in their mind. And my hypothesis is let it just sit for a little while and eventually people will forget about the dollars they spent and it'll just be trade value calculators or whatever else people use to sort of say, okay, well, you know. And that's where I, like, there's a guy whose roster, you can probably see it on there, it's called Breadwinner. I really like his build, but he keeps trying to, he's like, I want one of your quarterbacks, you know, he really wants Stafford. And I'm like, okay, it's going to take a bunch of your wide receiver depth to get Stafford plus Goff, I think he has. And he's like, that's a bit much for me. I'm like, all right, well, I'll see you down the line. I'm not going to give up Stafford below market value just to build that wide receiver depth. But I think that that can be, the longer we get away from the auction, I think the more you can sort of make sure you recoup your full value if you do sell a star.
Yeah. And I think, like, you can sort of see it's interesting because it's the same debate you just had, right? Which is like, hey, would you rather have a couple bucks here and there to spend on two or three? Like, that roster build has Marquise Brown at $4, has Landry at two, has Corey Davis at four, mm-hmm. has Curtis Samuel at five, right? You sort of keep going down there and you're like, all right, well, you've got Stafford at 25. And that's really the difference between, you know, the $9 that he spent on Goff, right? He spent the $16 on basically like six wide receivers, right? That's kind of his difference there. Just, you know, if you look back on that in a year, is that going to, are you going to regret having Stafford at that cost? Like, probably not. You know what I mean? Like, probably at the cost of those wide receivers, like, probably not. And, you know, what's interesting, and the other thing too about saving money is, like, I'm just looking through some of the other teams, and again, I'm not picking on people, but when you just sort of look at some of the guys, like Kenny Gainwell for $4, right? Like, he could be a cut guy pretty soon. You know what I mean? Like, he could
exactly.
be, which is absolutely not what you want. And, you know, there's a big portion of the back of your roster that you want to be able to be, you didn't spend a lot on, because that way, you know, the odds are they're not going to pan out. So you don't want to be spending, you know, 20% of your roster on the bottom tier of your roster that's just not going to be long-term valuable to you. Right? That's kind of a sunk thing too. And you need to be able to move off of, and you did a good job of getting like some of the backup running backs that and again, what's the difference between, you're largely making the same bet, right? Like, you're making the same, instead of having Darrell Henderson, you have Booker, but you're basically making the same bet against the starting running back. You know, how much different are they really worth? Like, I don't know, you know, it's not probably super all that much. You got Darrell Williams for a buck, right? What is he?
Yeah, exactly.
How much worse is he than Alexander Mattison, who went for more? You know what I mean? Like, you just sort of look at those things and you're like, I'd kind of rather be there because they're interchangeable ultimately.
Yeah. That was another, like, when you're talking about auction strategy, people got tired when it got down to the dollar point. And some of them were just like, I got to go out to dinner. I'm setting this on auto pick. And I was like, cool, this is money time. Like, I've been waiting, and now I got $19 to spend on 19 individual players, and sort of like getting who you really want between what would normally be rounds 16 through 28 or whatever was important to me, you know, because at that point, everyone's kind of starts to run out of money. And so that's where the nomination process is very important. So at the beginning, you might want to throw sort of fodder out there for other people to bid up on. But at the end, once it's dollar, everyone's down to a budget, you get who you nominate pretty much. And so you start to be like, well, I want Darrell Williams. I get him because I bid a dollar and nobody can outbid me. So that's another part of auction strategy. It's important just knowing kind of towards the end, once you nominate, you're going to get the player. And it's pretty important. You have 30 seconds to nominate. So then you're like, okay, get your cues all set up right. Make sure you sort of look who's available out there and execute as quickly as you can.
Yeah, for sure. And you did a good job of it. Yeah, I think you got the guys. And again, if you sort of stack them up, you kind of have the middle tier, but it's the same bet. And yeah, you spent, that's the bet that, you know, those extra few dollars that you could have spent on Madison or, you know, Henderson or whatever, like that's the difference between, you know, a middling quarterback and Stafford, right? Like those things sort of add up to you having, it's just the player I keep coming back to, the extra quarterback basically that you keep coming back to. So
the only second guessing I'm doing is I keep going back to format. I haven't played much best ball. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like having played enough fantasy, knowing that like that sort of feeling like, I started the wrong wide receiver goes away in best ball. And so if you look at the one guy's roster who I think has Fields and Goff, and just a pile of kind of like round 8 through round 15 wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm going to get a wide receiver one out of that group every week. And I kind of have a hard time arguing that. Or a wide receiver, you know, it's like he thinks he's done some math. I'm going to get 20 points out of one wide receiver one or two every week. That's the part I'm very curious to see how that plays out. Because if Ayuk and or Woods gets injured, now I need Darius Slayton or Lynn Bowden to produce. I think that's just more of a best ball angle, less about auction.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, I think you'd probably like to have a little bit more, especially with the mandatory start three. Like, if it was start two and a whole bunch of flex, like your tight end depth would be helpful. But yeah, you have a hole at that wide receiver range, and I don't think it's necessarily a week one must fix, right? Like, I think this team should be in contention, and you can sort of be a massage as you go along through the league. So I think it's an interesting thing. So any final takeaways that you would have, any final advice about the format or, you know, if someone wanted to take up an auction?
Try it out. It was really fun. I think both auction and best kind of more focused on auction. It is for people that like to do lots of leagues. I think it's really good to mix up the format of scoring and, in this case, now the format of drafting, and it's really fun. I'd give it a whirl. Make sure you can find yourself, have a family. You give them a warning and try to set aside as much like quiet time as you can for 4 hours.
What is quiet time? I've never heard of this thing. I've never heard of this phenomenon.
Me in the basement with my door closed. I told my oldest daughter was home, and I told her, I'm like, jokingly, I was like, don't come get me for the next 2 hours unless the house is burning down. And she's like, okay. And then she comes in and I'm like, what's up? And it wasn't that intense. I was like, what's going on? She's like, the house isn't burning down, but you know, she needed something. I was like, okay, no problem. You can figure it out.
Yeah. 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 You went soft on her. Yeah. Well, Dan, I want to thank you for coming on. And I appreciate, you know, that this draft, this is a journey that I was really interested to see sort of how you took. And I think you did a good job of it. Made us all at Analytics of Dynasty very proud. And so we'll be looking forward to hearing how you go. You know, so if you're thinking auction strategy, best ball strategy, you know, seeing some, you know, how it sort of goes live fire, like this is a good example of some of the preparations that you need to do and take from the lessons that Dan learned and, you know, some of the mistakes that he learned from too, and optimize it for your team. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.